Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Ladies and gentlemen, please take your seats. The show is about to begin.
Welcome back to the one and only Cavs the Podcast, featuring commentary from all of your favorite Cavs the Blog bloggers. Now, sit back, relax, and enjoy.
Welcome to Cavs the Podcast. I'm Nate Smith. I am here with Chris Francis. Hopefully Eli Kim will be joining us soon. And hey, Chris, it's nice to hear your voice.
Yeah, good to hear yours too, man. It's been way too long.
it's been a minute, that's for sure.
How you doing up there in Michigan?
I'm doing good. Eli, are you on?
I am.
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
Wow. What is going on? Wow.
The three musketeers together again. Or sorry, yes, the three cavaliers, sure. I guess I should say.
That's right.
It's been a minute. Thanks for hanging in there, everybody. And thanks for my Korean brothers taking over the podcast booth here. and putting in a couple without me. I was pretty sick for the better part of 2 months. So
yeah, hopefully you're past.
I'm good. I'm tip top.
Nice. So let's go.
Losing weight, getting into my summer weight. I'm gonna be biking around the state this summer.
Nice. So, show off that beach bod, Nate.
Absolutely. You guys will have to come up, and we'll have to have a pose off on the beach. Anyway,
don't worry, guys. We won't do that because I look more like George Niang than anyone else.
I doubt that. I feel like we share a body type. Anyway, So Cavs, they won tonight, going away. But we all have to say the Miami loss, most demoralizing loss of the season. Maybe not the worst loss in terms. They just look like they had nothing, right? Like everybody's openly questioning the future of this team, right? Eli, jump in here. Tell me I'm crazy.
No, I think the way they lost was just embarrassing, and then couple that with obviously losing what, 4 straight, and the standings are just tightening up with about 10 to 12 games left for everyone, so. Yeah, it just kind of felt like that might be rock bottom at the worst time, because everyone behind the Cavs in the standings are starting to play pretty well, including like the Knicks, Magic, Pacers, and obviously the Heat. So it was a pretty rock bottom. Thankfully, I was at a birthday party, so I couldn't be too depressed last night.
For you? Was it your birthday?
No, not my birthday. No, oh, okay. No, my buddy's birthday.
Oh, okay. As long as it wasn't you or the lady, I'm
yeah, it was.
Then,
not.
Then we would have had to sing you happy birthday. So, and that would have made for a weird podcast. Anyway, yeah, it was. I mean, against Miami, they got down by as much as 40 in the third quarter, 45 in the fourth quarter. They just kind of had no answer for Miami's full court press and Miami's zone. And I don't think anybody thought that this stretch would be easy for the Cavs. And I don't think people mind the losing. It's the way they're losing, and that they look like they quit, and they look like a team that doesn't have a lot of answers and can't make adjustments. Is that, am I way off base here, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say the main thing is, I disagree with it, is just putting too much stock into one game in the middle. I mean, near the end, granted it's near the end of the regular season, but, you know, it's been a brutal stretch for the Cavs schedule-wise and also just opponent-wise. Also, all the injuries, like, they're missing a lot of freaking guys. So it's just not, I mean, I can't put too much stock into a game like that. I mean, to me, they were due. Honestly, we haven't seen a game like that from them in a very long time.
I would disagree.
What other games?
The Houston game a week before was a game they absolutely should have won. A game that, you know, the Cavs seem to have a hard time playing on Sunday afternoon. I don't know if anybody else has noticed that. Like, when their games tip off before 7, they're not good. And especially on Sunday afternoon, they seem pretty bad. And it makes, you know, I wrote today, it makes me wonder what they're doing on Saturday night that they can't seem to compete on Sunday afternoon. And I really thought that Houston loss was pretty brutal against a team they absolutely should have beaten.
I don't know. It's a road game against it. I mean, they're playing well. Houston's playing well. So
they hadn't been coming into that game.
They've been on a 7-game win streak or something like that, 7 or 8-game win streak.
Well, now I got to look that up.
Yeah, no, I mean, it looks like Jalen Green's turned a corner. They've been playing pretty solid in that recent stretch. You know, there's some accusations that they're, you know, it's a Mickey Mouse March. So, but with some teams, you know, trying to tank or whatever.
Hey, you play the team that's in front of you.
Yeah, of course, exactly. So I'm going to give them credit and say it's not that bad of a loss, not of the magnitude of Miami.
No, that's for sure. And maybe that was part of it. Maybe, you know, one of the things, Alperen Sengun's gone down and it's changed the way they've played. And I think maybe Sengun doesn't match their style. Of 100% they have that's on been, the team.
There's a huge discourse. I know some Houston Rocket fans and interact with some Houston Rocket fans. There's a massive discourse and just there's a war. There's sides on their in their fan base with respect to Sengun and Jalen Green. Sengun's obviously been driving whatever success they've had over recent times, but there's been a complaint that he's not used enough on offense. His defense obviously kind of sucks. So, he could be targeted. And then Jalen Green's recent good play has just, and also, like you said, Sengun's absence is just kind of increasingly driven a wedge between the haters and the pro factions or whatever, between the two sides that I've noticed. So I could be off base, but I mean, that's my impression.
Chris Francis with his pulse on every fan base right. in the NBA.
That's right.
In the association. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, that aside, so you, Chris, are just saying a lot of it's schedule catching up with them and injuries catching up with them. You're not prepared to write the season off after that Miami loss?
No, I mean, I think the most concerning thing, I went and took a look at the numbers post All-Star break, and it really, I feel like you could boil everything down to Donovan Mitchell sucked after the All-Star break and has been hurt. And Garland has not been able to pick up the slack offensively enough to keep on winning at the clip they were, you know, and it's kind of a team-wide struggle. I mean, looking at the net ratings, we have a precious two players on the positive side of the ledger, and that's Caris LeVert and Darius Garland, and they're barely over. You know, basically everybody's a net negative. Donovan Mitchell was awful post All-Star break, or the team was awful with Mitchell post All-Star break is what I should say more accurately. Strus off a cliff, you know, at post All-Star break. Same, you could say with the same with Dean Wade, Coro, Mobley, Merrill, Allen. So there's really nobody that's been playing well post All-Star break. And in the injuries, like how many guys have been out, you know, with Wade, Strus, Mitchell, Mobley just got back. So, yeah, I mean, the team needs to get healthy, of course. And also, I think you mentioned, Nate, a legitimate, you know, I think there's been minutes management, mismanagement, you know, trying to find some guys rest. Like it looks like to me that JB basically ground Strus and Mitchell down into a pulp, you know, for the end of the season, you know, and which sucks. So I don't know if that's an accurate take to you guys, but that's what I'm seeing.
No, I feel you on a lot of that. I can't remember what was the game before the Miami game.
Hot Googling action.
Yeah. The Timberwolves, yeah. And in that game, Darius Garland was a disaster in the third quarter. I think he had something – he just had an awful quarter, and they were getting run. And I was like, why is Darius Garland still playing? Like, why aren't you playing Craig Porter Jr.? And I had a lot of people tell me, well, Craig Porter Jr. hasn't gotten a lot of minutes lately. And to that, I'd say if you get 6 minutes in a game or 7 minutes in a game – you're not getting a full rotation. You know you're going to get yanked as soon as you make a mistake. You looked at the game before that. He had 12 points. Before that two-game stretch, he had 12 points. He had a really good run. Tonight, he had another really good game. I feel like JB doesn't trust Craig Porter Jr. and yanks him out at the first opportunity or doesn't play him. And then just overplays LeVert and Garland. You can see how much LeVert has been running down the last two games. You know, he's had a terrible couple games after he was pretty darn hot for a good stretch. And then today you saw Craig Porter Jr. You know, everybody is talking about one of the Cavs' problems is their inability to generate rim pressure with penetration. Well, who was doing that tonight? It was Craig Porter Jr. And one of the problems that the Cavs were having against Miami and against the Timberwolves is the Cavs had been refusing to play downhill. Like, they would come off a screen and they would just dribble to the side instead of coming off the screen hard and compressing the defense. No one was running their cuts through to completion to open up the offense in the empty space when the defense moved over. It was like one or two steps in and then I'm going to pass it out. You know, it just, there was no gravity towards the rim by the Cavs. And I feel like they addressed that some tonight. I mean, it's really easy when your second line front court is Poku and Davis Bertans. So, you know, the Hornets are a good tune-up team. They're not very good at all. But the Cavs were running more stuff towards the basket with the guards. And, you know, their guards were a lot more decisive going to the basket. And that was helpful. but it just seemed like when they were playing Miami, like Miami was a professional basketball team that knew how to play playoff basketball and was doing it. And the Cavs didn't seem to be able to do that at all. And that was what my big concern was. Eli, any reaction to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think Miami is, they have heat culture for a reason. I mean, they do set the standard, and no matter what seed they are, you're going to be scared because they prove it year after year that they're, you know, competitive and have the right stuff to be competitive in the playoffs. So it was really disappointing. I think it's, when you look at it holistically too, it's also really disappointing they couldn't sneak the win against the Heat before the Timberwolves game when Bam wasn't playing, and they let Jimmy Butler like have one of his best scoring games of the season, of course.
To me, in a way, that game was more impressive by Miami because they played a lot of subs that game, and their subs played really well. And that's something that isn't happening for the Cavs.
Yeah, but I think the one thing that is really hard to, I think, look at this with, obviously it's very hard to take positives from this, but, you know, the Cavs until three games ago were missing more than half the starting lineup, and then you're playing, you know, you're starting Niang, you're starting LeVert, you're relying on a guy on a 10-day contract to be kind of in the rotation in Marcus Morris. And look, I get it. It's not a rosy outlook. And candidly, I think my bigger concern is not if that those guys are available. It's also there's just no time for, even if they're 100% healthy, for the Cavs to, you know, they'll get less than 10 games with their healthy starting lineup, it looks like, before the playoffs start. So, I think the schedule is brutal. I think they keep talking about how they're playing 14 games in 14 different cities in a row. Obviously, they're playing home and away, but that schedule, obviously, with all that travel, is definitely brutal. But at the same time, there's no excuses. It's not like the Cavs get, you know, any breaks, and I'm sure a lot of teams have brutal road trips and schedule issues as well. So it's tough to watch and borderline depressing sometimes, but I think the Cavs have to find a way to kind of grit through and somehow keep home court at the very least, with, you know, 11 games left in the season.
Interesting. And when we come back, I'm going to take you through a little of why the Cavs are having that schedule pressure. So stay tuned.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back to Cavs the Podcast. Nate Smith, Eli Kim, Chris Francis. We're back together again. And the Cavs did play well tonight. Really tough shooting first quarter. They definitely were in their heads a little bit. I think the Miami game rattled them. But as the game went on, most especially George Niang and Sam Merrill got it going for Cleveland. I believe Niang had 17 points, 5 three-pointers. Sam Merrill had 12 points, 4 three-pointers. Both of them played one of the better games they played in a while. As I mentioned earlier, Darius Garland had kind of a bounce-back game, 15 points, 10 assists, only 3 turnovers, which I can't remember the last time Darius Garland had a 3-to-1 turnover ratio in a game. And then Jared Allen and Evan Mobley with just another really nice game. I think Jared Allen had yet another double-double, 17 and 13. Evan Mobley had 17, 7, and 8. And then a really nice game for Isaac Okoro again with 14 points when I think it was the first time he'd scored 12 or more in quite some time. So nice, nice bounce-back game. Marcus Morris Sr. Did what I predicted he would do when the Cavs sign him. And you got to love a guy who can manage to get himself ejected in a game on a 10-day contract. So, you know, that takes talent. You know,
we got our goon.
Yeah, to pick up a flagrant 2 on a 10-day contract is pretty impressive.
I love it. Shout out to Marcus Morris.
Yeah, and then a nice game by Craig Porter Jr. with 9 points and 4 assists in just about 14 minutes of play. So, you know, Cavs ran an 8-man rotation. It worked out. I guess 9-man if you include Marcus Morris, but
yeah, it was supposed to be 9-man.
Yeah, they didn't throw Tristan in the mix after Morris went down. So anyway, but there were some other really interesting results tonight. But before that, who stood out for you, Chris? Tonight against Charlotte?
I mean, Sam Merrill, for one. That was finally nice for him to get a get-right game. I think Mobley looked better tonight, looked more like himself. Garland had a quietly nice game. You know, even LeVert had a decent game. I know he didn't shoot well, but 7 rebounds, 7 assists, 3 stocks, you know, so he contributed in other ways to the victory. Those are the ones that stick out. You know, got to give a shout out to Niang, you know, with his shooting. Thank God it's going okay. So, I mean, it was just nice. You know, I think you made the comment on Twitter that the only legit player that Charlotte has right now playing is Brandon Miller,
which is totally true. He looks awesome.
He does look good.
He's like 6'10", and he moves like a guard. He's got the body of a power forward and the game of a guard.
Yeah.
he looked really impressive.
He looked really good. He's very impressive. But that's the thing is, like, you know, so the Cavs did what they had to do. Guys that should have looked impressive did look impressive. I did like, you know, you mentioned the minutes for Porter Jr. What's interesting is, I went back and checked his stats pre and post All-Star break, some of his advanced stats. And basically, like, for whatever the reason, Porter was averaging close to 15 minutes a game pre All-Star break, and post All-Star break only averaging 10. But somehow his efficiency has climbed up a decent amount from 55% true shooting to nearly 60% true shooting on the same usage. So I don't understand why he's getting fewer minutes when he's actually playing better. So that's one thing I noticed. He had a nice block. I don't know if you remember that.
He had a very nice block. Yeah.
Yeah. To kind of key that run, or to continue that run there. I don't know if it was like in the second half or.
He had that block and then he had that and one. Cutting to the basket that really did kind of spark that run.
Yeah. No, and I think you made a great point is that he's one of the few guys, I think Caris LeVert is really the other, that's actually going to – they have the ability to get all the way to the rim and actually try and finish. They have long arms, can try and finish, got some wingspan, can finish over bigs. So it was just nice to see CPJ, get right, because, the team hasn't been playing well recently with him on the court. The question to me is, was that driven by the coach, or is it actually him playing poorly? Because the numbers say he's actually more efficient scoring wise. Nothing's changed about his game at all pre and post All-Star break. It's his minutes getting cut and his minutes getting inconsistent post All-Star break, which is
JB. Chris, the answer to your question is two letters, JB.
John Blair.
Yes.
I mean, I'll say that one of the things that has happened that has diminished CPJ's role a little is that, thankfully, Sam Merrill has gotten consistent minutes. He struggled a bit at times. He went through a big shooting slump. But one of the things outside of, there was one game where Sam Merrill was just abysmal. And I can't remember the particular game. And he probably can't either. But he is always in the right place on defense. Even if he gets physically overmatched sometimes, he's almost always in the right place on defense. He's always in the right spot for defensive rebounds, which really surprises me. I was like, oh, there's Sam Merrill coming in from the weak side. Like, he is so much, he does the things that Garland just doesn't do at all, which is rebound, doesn't turn the ball over, really good assist to turnover ratio, decent assist rate. He's not a guy that's going to get you a ton of steals or blocks, but he's in the right place on defense, so he's not a total liability.
Here's a wacky stat for you. Comparing Sam Merrill and Isaac Okoro, the Cavs' defensive rating with Sam Merrill on the court post All-Star break is 108.3, which is, that's amazingly stellar. I mean, like, there's nobody on the team basically better than that. The Cavs' defensive rating with Okoro on the court is 114.8, where Okoro is making it up is actually on the offensive end, whereas Sam really, for whatever the reason, the offense is not going off with Sam on the court, which is really interesting.
Yeah, well, I think there's a couple reasons for that. And one of the reasons is I wrote about the last two. I've been writing my recaps in the live thread headers, but the last two games, one of the things about Darius Garland is he holds the damn ball too long, and he finally got rid of the ball tonight. Like, he just refuses to hit the short roll guy for game after game after game, or just make the easy pass out of the pick and pop, and he's finally making the easy pass. Like, when you make the easy pass out of the pick and pop, then the ball can rotate. The problem is he was looking for home run passes over and over and over, and they just weren't happening. And that's part of the thing with Sam Merrill is he does that two-man game where he'll probe, and then he'll pass, and then he'll reset, and he'll screen, and he'll reset. And he's really good with guys that know how to play that motion offense and know how to, screen and rescreen. And
the ball doesn't stick.
Yeah, the ball doesn't stick, but the problem is Darius Garland has been terrible with Donovan Mitchell out, at least until this game, of finding weak side shooters. And part of the reason is he drives into the teeth of the defense because he holds the ball too long and he can't find good passing angles. So what you saw tonight was him moving the ball on the first or second step out of the drive rather than getting all the way into the defense and trying to pass it and turn it over. Now, part of that is you're playing Charlotte. Can you do that against a real defense? I don't know, but Sam Merrill definitely got going because he got the ball in rhythm. The other thing that happens is the Cavs get lazy on offense. They stop setting screens. And you saw tonight the Cavs are running their offense the right way. In the first quarter, they just weren't hitting their shots. And they finally broke through. And part of that is you just wear the other team down. When you run good offense, when you play lazy offense, they coast. And, one of the things that I think happens with Sam Merrill is he keeps moving on offense, so it wears out the other team. And they don't play defense as well, or they don't play offense as well. It's like weird. Okoro's bad offense contributes to his bad defense, and Sam's good offense contributes to his good defense, I feel like, a little bit. But that might be a stretch. I don't know. Anything you're seeing about Sam Merrill and, you know, Craig Porter Jr., Eli, that you want to point out?
I do think Merrill has gotten more consistent minutes, like you said. Seeing him live, I actually saw him at the Knicks. I went to the Knicks game and sat pretty close. It's amazing how quick his shot is and looks like in person. And I think I was, when I saw him live, it was actually pretty impressive to see how this guy looks skinnier, you know, like a sheet of paper, but he's tough. I mean, he's not the most athletic guy, but he is very positionally sound, which was even noticeable when the Cavs weren't playing that great, like that Knicks game that I happened to go to.
Yeah, and he dives for loose balls, and he, you know, he isn't afraid to take a trade. I think he leads the team in charges.
Yeah, and, you know, I think the thing about Sam Merrill that just really pisses me off even now is that the Cavs, after they lost the Knicks last year, made all these excuses like, oh, we didn't have anybody who could shoot threes. We didn't have the right personnel. He was on their team last year. They didn't try him at all in the playoffs, and maybe they should have. I'm not saying they would have won, but it's just crazy that they literally just put their hands up and like, oh, well, it's not going to work with Jetty Osman and, you know, Danny Green, but let's not even try Sam Merrill in, you know, pivotal game three, game four. Anyways, I digress. I do think it's also interesting that not only is LeVert starting along Darius, but he's also kind of getting, you know, pummeled to the ground by also continuing to serve as the point guard for the second unit. I feel like I thought with Donovan being out this long, CPJ would start to get a lot more minutes, but that just really hasn't come to fruition, which is another, you know, short sight of JB, in my opinion. Let's just be honest, there's only 10 games left. How realistic do we feel that Donovan and Strus will come back and be fine? And, you know, Mobley, I think, had a great game tonight. Like you said, when the ball doesn't stick, it moves around for everybody. And I was shocked to see that even Mobley had like 8 assists tonight. I think Allen had 4 assists, and this is after Allen has not really, you know, had any assists for a few games, I feel like. So I just think the Cavs, like, stylistically keep fighting against themselves and shooting themselves in the foot. Even with all these injuries and changes, they just don't have, I think, they found an identity when they won, you know, the 18 games or 18 out of 19 games, but then they just, for whatever reason, decided to go away from that. And I think tonight was like a very small baby step to try to go back to that style of play.
Well, I had several discussions on social media. Do you think the issue is Garland? Can Garland only play ISO and pick and roll and that style that we were playing, or that they were playing when he was hurt? They can't play with Garland. Is that the issue?
I think they can, but I think what is happening is with Mitchell out, he feels pressure to do what he's most accustomed to, which is just dribbling the air out of the ball, setting a pick and roll and either hitting like a easy dunk or easy lob, you know, alley-oop or someone wide open in the corner. But honestly, I feel like even when he was out for a bit and they were playing well, like, he should have been watching what Sam Merrill's doing. He should have been watching what, you know, the spot of shooting guys were doing, because obviously I think Darius is a very talented, you know, spot of shooter, but for some reason he doesn't want to do that when Donovan's out. It's like ingrained that he doesn't, like, when Donovan's out, he has to be the guy dribbling the air out of the ball. I do think obviously that still comes down to coaching. I still think that I think Darius is very talented. I don't think he's a superstar by any means, but I do think he has a lot of talent, and I just think the Cavs aren't utilizing him correctly, even when Donovan's truly, you know, when the team is in full strength.
Well, one of the things I talked about was that Darius Garland seems to play his best when he's playing with these high IQ point guards who can, you know, who play the whole game. You know, Ricky Rubio always ran the play through to completion. Like, he would cut through the defense knowing he was probably never getting the ball back. But just he ran that because he knew the motion would create the openings for guys. And I feel like Donovan does the same kind of thing. I feel like one of Darius Garland's big problems is he dribbles the ball around and he stops and stands in one place. And a lot of times he isn't even ready to shoot when the ball comes back to him, which also drives me a little nuts. And he doesn't relocate to the corner. It's like he just forgets how to play basketball when he's trying to do too much. And it really hurts him. And it like you said, it kind of drives me nuts. But Chris, anything to add? Before we go to the break?
Yeah, I just think, piggybacking off of you guys, I think it's the combination of Garland and Mobley being on the court. You know, when the Cavs were on that run, it was Garland and Mobley that were missing. I would both mention they're the two youngest players by a considerable amount out of the guys that they were playing in that starting lineup or whatever. So when you throw in a 22-year-old, 23-year-old, whatever he is, and 21-year-old onto the court on a team that has high expectations, I mean, they just don't have the NBA experience to really know how to play that game, you know, just that read and react game and flow in rhythm, you know, and don't the ball sticks to them, to those two guys, the most that I've seen. You know, the ball doesn't stick when it's Donovan Strus, Wade, Okoro, and Allen. Those guys are going to get off the ball, especially, you know, Okoro, Wade, Strus, all of them are really, and even Allen, I mean, all of them, they're just all good, experienced guys. You know, none of those guys are younger than 25 years old, 26 years old. So I just think the lack of experience is showing whenever Garland and Mobley are on the court. And that's the reason for the hesitancy. That's the reason for the lack of rhythm on offense, is just because they're not used to trusting the pass and knowing that the ball is going to come back to them, you know, on like you said, the re-screens, the movement, you know, the give and go actions. You know, they just got to trust the pass more, you know. And I agree with you that DG struggles with that, especially, you know, doing the Steph Curry stuff. You know, pass the ball, give it up, run, get a shot, you know, create a shot off, you know, off movement instead of off the dribble. And then with Donovan, what's interesting, you look at his numbers post All-Star break, the thing that tanked in his numbers was his passing. So he was getting negatively affected by the inability of Garland and Mobley to move the ball. Like, he was starting to pass less because his role was changing within the offense, and they were unable to keep the offense flowing off the ball.
Well put. You know, one of the things I would add to that is, you know, Darius Garland's in his fifth year, and I believe every one of those years was with his coach. Like, he should know how to do those things by now, I would think. Am I just crazy here? We'll find out after the break. Welcome back to Cavs Podcast. I'm Nate Smith. Chris Francis is here with me. Elijah Kim is here with me. And once again, can I just say, it was a delight to listen to you two podcast while I was rehabbing. And you guys did a really good job, so thank you. It was awesome.
Don't make me cry on air.
That was my plan. Now you're not. What are you not going to do it? You're not going to give us real tears? Anyway, so some interesting results tonight. I think the most interesting is the Celtics blew like a 30-point lead against the Hawks to drop one in Atlanta. You know, and I don't know if it matters all that much, because how far ahead of everybody are the Celtics? They have 57 wins, and the next closest is Denver with 50. So, you know, the Celtics can certainly afford to blow a game. I don't think anybody is under the illusion that anyone is catching the Celtics, even in the West, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're prohibited favorites to win the title.
Like, yeah.
Basically, all the teams that have done what they've done in the regular season have won titles, the majority of them. It's rare that they don't. So this was a classic case of them beating everybody's ass so bad that they just finally lost their focus for the first time.
Yeah, which honestly is very similar to what happened to them against the Cavs in the Dean Wade game.
Right. No, that's actually a good point. Yeah.
Because honestly, the Cavs really had no business winning that game. And it's kind of funny because the Cavs had literally three games in, you know, the Cavs record could be three games worse because they had three games they absolutely had no business winning. That game, the Max Strus 59 footer, and then
Well, that game, they kind of blew it at
well,
the
that's
end, right?
Also true. But I would say the other game was the first Timberwolves game where Rudy got a tech with like a second, with like 15 seconds left in the game to put the Cavs up one. And that was a very strange game as well. So, yeah, the Cavs could be worse, but just goes to show you, you know, take advantage of your opportunities when they're in front of you. And so right now the Cavs are sitting at third. I think they're half a game behind the Bucks and a game ahead of the Knicks, with Orlando and the Pacers, you know, right there, three and four games behind them. It's a pretty tight race in the East. And, oh, all of a sudden Miami has 39 wins and looks like, at least the game I saw, they look like the team that built that knocked Milwaukee out of the playoffs last year and made a run to the finals. So if you had your druthers, Eli, who would you want the Cavs to play in the first round? And what would their seed be?
I think right now the Pacers are the sixth seed. I think I'd be okay with that. I think that'd be a matchup.
I think the Pacers are the ideal first round matchup for the Cavs.
Mm-hmm. I think the Pacers are. I think, I mean, that's, I think, the most realistic one at this point, too. But it also kind of depends on if Embiid is coming back, because 76ers may be the other one if he's not coming back, obviously.
Yeah, the other team that I wouldn't hate is the Magic. I feel like for whatever reason, the Cavs match up pretty well with the Magic. And I could see a scenario where New York jumps Cleveland and then that 4-5 matchup is against the Magic. That feels like it could happen. But I would love to, I honestly almost feel like that second seed with, you know, Miami or Philly there scares me almost more than being the third seed playing the Magic or the Pacers, or the fourth seed playing one of those two teams. What about you, Chris?
Yeah, I was just going to say, piggybacking off of you, I think it's definitely the Magic or Pacers. It's going to be their first go around in the playoffs and with their respective cores. So the Cavs should have the experience advantage against those teams. And they've matched up, I think, okay against both of those teams. New York scares for the obvious reasons. I don't know if the Cavs will be able to match their physicality. You could say the same for the Heat or the Sixers. I agree the Sixers probably better without it. I mean, it'd be better to face the Sixers without Embiid than probably the Heat, you know, with all that experience that they have. Although there's another part of me that kind of wants to see them against the Heat, because if they can overcome that, you know, that would be a huge boost. If they could take a series from the Heat the first round, what kind of high would they be on for the second round? You know what I mean? That would be a huge boost of confidence for them. So it's interesting. So I don't, you know, really the only team I think the Cavs probably, I think the two scariest teams are really the Knicks and the Heat, you know, at the end of the day. So, and the Heat might even sneak into the sixth seed for that matter. They're only a half game behind the Pacers, and I wouldn't trust the Pacers to to close this out over the Heat.
The only weird thing about that, it's not like the Heat have been tearing it up. I mean, they're 4-6 in their last 10 games. They're not, you know, world beaters, but they don't beat themselves.
Yeah. They're heavily injured right now, too, I think. Yep.
Yeah. And that's been their big bugaboo. I don't know. So here I will ask you, would you rather lose in the first round and get a new coach next year than, you know, beat a team like Orlando and the Pacers and go to the second round and then lose and not get a new coach next year? Eli.
Man, that's tough.
Come on. That's not that tough, is it?
Well, what do you say then, Chris?
Oh, you got to win. We take the win.
I'm with you. Yeah, you take the win.
Take the win.
For sure.
Yeah. Come on. Come on.
I think the perfect scenario, though, if I had to be honest, is, you know, the Cavs beat the Magic or the Pacers, and then obviously they play the Bucks in the second round or the Celtics. And if they get, like, swept or gentlemen swept in that, and you still fire JB, that'd be the best scenario, I think, for the team.
Honestly, the weird thing is I think the Cavs weirdly match up with Milwaukee well. For whatever reason, they just seem to play Milwaukee pretty well. And I think mainly it's because Mobley and Allen are two of the guys that can kind of match Giannis in length and athleticism. I mean, my dream scenario of actually winning games is, you know, go ahead and beat Milwaukee in the second round and make the Eastern Conference Finals. That's my dream.
I think kind of piggybacking off your point there, I don't know if – I mean, yeah, Boston's a hell of a team, had a hell of a season, but I don't think they – I don't really feel like Boston or Milwaukee strikes fear. It's more like the fear of just Cleveland falling flat on their face or just, you know, just totally panic choking, you know, and not coming close to their best play, you know.
Yeah, I'm with you. Or just getting out-coached. You know, that's the one thing that worries me about the Pacers is Rick Carlisle, you know, just out-coaching them. But, yeah, I'm with you. I want to see them fight and play hard and play well and feel like the path they're on is sustainable. Like, I think, you know, and this gets a little bit into, you know, they have to play well enough that Donovan Mitchell doesn't want to pull the ripcord. Right, Eli?
Yes. I mean, they have to win a series or I don't think he wants to stick around because he was going to the second round all the time with Utah.
Right. And, you know, they have all these young guys. Like, what is the point of doing this if you're just getting stuck with young guys and you're in a worse situation than you were? Chris, do the Cavs have to win a playoff series to keep Donovan Mitchell?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Easily. And they've got to be competitive. It's got to be like a 6 or 7 gamer, like, that comes down to the wire in the second round. He's got to feel like they're real contenders this year and beyond, or at least he has to see the vision of a contender, a sustained contender for the next. He's going to be entering basically the peak of his career, you know, in terms of what he's trying to achieve for it. You know,
the aging curve is he's there.
He's on the peak of it. Looking at
the plateau, downside, if you will.
Yeah, exactly. So he's looking at the next 5 years. I've got to win. I think if I'm Donovan Mitchell, I'm thinking I got to win a title or two. You know, that's the hope over the next 5 years. Let's win one title or two, you know, to really solidify myself as one of the best NBA players of all time. So, you know, I think they've got to show something in the second round. They can't just get to the second round. They got to show something. And the selling point for Cleveland, you know, on Cleveland's end as an organization is Donovan, stay, because with you, the young core, we could see 5 to 10 years of success, you know, down the road. You know, we could ride the whole prime of Evan Mobley's career. You know, he's got 10 years to go. of it. You know what I mean? So Donovan can retire a Cav and compete for championships, you know, with a guy like Mobley at his side and, you know, Darius Garland and Jared Allen, you know, for 5-6 years or whatever, you know, how long he lasts or whatever. But and they'll obviously have to probably retool at some point or whatever. But there's an, you know, the selling point is that 5 to 10 years, Donovan could be on a contender, and they have to show it now because they got to see that, you know, because then the conversation becomes, you know, what's been the narrative recently, you know, is who's the trade bait? What happens if this thing falls on his face? Who's the trade bait this offseason? You know what I mean?
Oh, for sure. I think that gets a lot to what we were talking about, you know, on the text message thread. You know, you and I, Eli, were going back and forth of who could the Cavs trade Darius Garland for, and especially when he's playing terribly. And I think maybe we'll get into that a little bit after the break. Welcome to Cavs Podcast. Eli Kim, Chris Francis, I'm the least important person here, Nate Smith, and I think it might be time to talk a little slop talk. A little slop. Do the Cavs need to trade Darius Garland, Eli?
You didn't do the snort.
Well, it's funny. I don't know the answer to that. I don't think anyone knows the answer to that until we see the result of the playoffs.
Nor can they trade him till then.
Yes, nor can they. They cannot trade him until after the playoffs anyway. Here's kind of my thinking, and maybe it's my cynicism, but let's say the Cavs make it out of the first round and have a 5 or 6 game series with Boston or Milwaukee, but ultimately lose. And it's very clear that Donovan carries the team. He averages like 30 points a game, you know, close to double digit assists, you know, and Darius averages like 15 points a game with like, you know, a lot of turnovers, but, you know, it's a couple games where he's on fire and hits a lot of shots. In that scenario, I don't know what you do, because obviously you have some success with that backcourt and you might choose to ride with it and, you know, try to make incremental improvements around the core four still. I think the worst case scenario is the Cavs lose in the first round. Darius plays terribly. Mitchell plays decent. And Donovan says, I don't want to be here. Then you have to somehow maximize Donovan's value, but then you're stuck with a player who 2 years in a row did not play well in the playoffs, right? So I think that this kind of all hinges on Donovan's decision as well, because if the Cavs don't do well in the playoffs but Donovan still elects to stay, then I do think they probably will explore trading Darius for a piece that fits better to kind of more modernize the Cavs. But if they don't do well and he decides to leave, that's when this could all just fall apart, to be, you know, completely honest with you, because they're not going to get anywhere near the return that they paid to get him. That's
my, for sure,
my pick.
Chris, you want to add to that?
Yeah. I mean, to Eli's point about Garland, whether he plays well or not, I mean, he played decently, like not that great, but he played decently enough as a young guy in the playoffs last year. I think
he couldn't guard Jalen Brunson. That was the issue, but
right,
we all
right.
knew he couldn't guard Jalen Brunson.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, apparently a lot of guys and nobody on the Cavs could apparently. I think, you know, Garland's so young. I'm not putting too much stock in what he does, you know, in the playoffs now or this season as a thing that means, oh, he can't win in the future, you know, because he's just so young. I mean, do 23-year-old point guards win big in the NBA in the playoffs?
He's 24. You
know, 24, I'm sorry. just turned 24. So
in January. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't know that there's any, unless you're like a, just straight up one of the all time great Hall of Fame players, you know, none come to mind, you know, Isaiah Thomas, I guess, is probably one. I don't even know if Curry was one.
He was a little older.
Yeah, he was a little older. So, yeah, so that doesn't concern me as much as, really the concern is, to me, it's can JB get these guys to play together and can he push the right buttons? You know, the thing about the playoffs, you know, Eli brought up the point earlier about not even trying Sam Merrill last year. You know, to me, that's, you know, you could say, well, Sam Merrill, he didn't play. He was a G leaguer, blah, blah, blah. But like, why not empty the clip in the playoffs? You know, you're supposed to, as a coach, continually adjust and throw everything at the wall. You know, this you're playing for your basketball livelihood, you know, in that series. Try everything, you know, and that was the frustrating thing is, There was no plan C. There was no plan D. There was no plan E. You know, there wasn't a constant evolution through the series where he was trying to push buttons. We saw one adjustment, which was starting Karis over Okoro, and that was it. Like, there was no other adjustments that he made in that series. We just got obliterated, you know? So, you know, that's what concerns me the most, I guess, in the playoffs is, can we see JB make the adjustments? And that's when coaching matters, is in the playoffs, because you're seeing the same team over and over and over again. Like, that's when the coaching matters on the margins. So are we going to see,
for sure,
you know, are we going to see JB contribute to wins when it matters most?
I think that's part of what's catching up with the Cavs now, is that everybody's scouting them. They're on their second go-around through the association right now this season. And teams know their pet moves. I mean, who was it? I think it was Bridges or Miller that Tristan Thompson got that offensive foul. And he knew exactly that Tristan was going to throw that armbar at him and put his throat right there and then picked up that offensive foul. It was like, you know, teams know what the Cavs are running. They know what they're going to do, and the Cavs haven't adjusted. You know, clearly Miami knew what to do there. And thankfully, the Cavs did adjust between games, but in-game adjustments, we haven't seen it from JB. I have seen some things better this year. You know, when the Cavs were winning all those games before the All-Star break, that was some of the best Cavalier basketball I'd ever seen, and I thought JB was coaching his ass off. And, you know, one thing they've gotten much better at this year that I haven't complained nearly as much as I did last year, they've been much better at having a system in place for and using the coach's challenge to actually affect the game and not for JB to just hold a vendetta against the refs. That's been much better this year. But how many other things have not improved? And I'll get to something that has been driving me nuts that still hasn't improved in a minute here, but I want to hear, you know, Eli's take on JB. I can't even remember the original question I asked you, Chris, but what do you want to see from JB in the playoffs this year for him to keep his job or to get a contract extension?
Something completely different. I don't know. I mean, I just feel like when things get tough, JB retreats into his, we're going to have to out defend the team we're playing against. And that's when you're going to see him trot out, you know, maybe Mitchell, Okoro, Strus, and Mobley Allen. And I think he's going to stick with the two bigs a lot if things get tough. And I think that might be a mistake in certain scenarios.
Yeah, no, I'm with you.
I also just think that it's going to be really interesting to see his rotation choices. I feel like he has a tendency to just be very rigid and be like, I'm only going to play eight guys. I'm only going to play seven guys. And, you know, he plays kind of, he always leans towards veterans and the core four guys and gives them long leashes where, you know, if Sam Merrill goes in and he's ice cold and gets backdoor cutted three times, I mean, I think you can easily justify not continuing to play him, but that doesn't mean you go away from him for the whole series. I feel like JB's prone to kind of make big decisions like that. And I think ironically,
you saw it with Isaac Okoro the last 2 years.
Like, yeah,
and he couldn't shoot, and then they just glued him to the bench. And how is his confidence going to get better if that happens, you know?
Exactly. And I think last year, I was just about to say Okoro, ironically, in game four and five, like Okoro was shooting decently from three, but he still couldn't get enough time, to...
Yeah, and wasn't play as much as he needed. Wasn't game four or five the game where they started Garland on Brunson again? And I was like, what are they doing? Mm-hmm. You know, anyway, I would say, you know, all those things are true. I want him to be able to make mid-game adjustments, make a decision and adjustment on the fly. You know, one of the things I think I said about the Timberwolves game is his post-game comments were like, well, we need to penetrate the ball inside to open shooters. And I'm like, not against the Timberwolves. That's not what you want to do. You don't want to get the ball inside. You want to make Rudy defend in space and chase shooters, not get into him. And then that's what Minnesota wants you to do. So sometimes he just baffles me on the offensive end with some of the decisions he makes. But I think one of the things that, to me, if I was Donovan Mitchell, one of the biggest threats to Donovan Mitchell signing a extension, if I was him, I would look at the way the Cavs have managed their rotations and their injuries in the last 3-4 seasons. And I think it's abysmal. We've talked about how the Cavs mismanaged Kevin Love's hand, mismanaged his calf injury. You know, they sent Larry Nance back in with a broken hand. And when the Cavs sent Donovan Mitchell back in the game down 20 with a broken nose that was clearly like bent out of shape, you know, I told you guys, my wife has been an ER and an OR nurse and, you know, has seen a lot. And she like looked up from her phone. He's like, oh yeah, that's broken. And like, how do you send a guy back in a game that you're not going to win with a broken nose? Like what is the rationale for that? You know, if he gets elbowed again, he's going to hurt himself even worse. He might be out even longer. Like that just is nuts to me. Like who are the Cavs to me have to revamp their training staff and their rotations to start saving players from themselves and their coaching staff. And it, because it's been an issue the last 4 years, like you can talk about the injuries all you want, but the Cavs have been in this situation the last two seasons as they've been chasing the playoffs. Like at a certain point, it's not dumb luck. It's you're making decisions that are putting yourself in this situation. And you've got to change the way that you're approaching these things or it's going to keep happening. That to me is the, like, go study what Phoenix does with guys who has the best training staff in the league. Go study what the Lakers, how they keep all their old guys going. I mean, do something different because what you're doing isn't working. You're getting guys hurt every year and you're grinding guys. Never go full Tibbs. The lesson, never go full Tibbs. Even Tibbs doesn't go full Tibbs anymore.
Oh, he has. Have you seen the stats about Josh Hart?
No.
Oh, what about, man, Deuce McBride?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, the stat I saw about Hart was, like, I think he's averaging, like, 44 minutes a game.
That's insane.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Hardy's averaging a ton of minutes. Hunchback Hardy's averaging a ton.
Yeah. No, Tibbs is back to being full Tibbs.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. So go full Tibbs. But also, the Knicks are in a different situation a little bit. Like, this is their year. Like, they're either going to get over the hump or I don't know. Nah, never go full Tibbs. It's dumb.
I think to go back on JB, though, the one thing that drives me nuts is, and this is very anecdotal, don't get me wrong, but, you know, I went to that Knicks game, like I said, with my girlfriend, and obviously the Cavs lost by 8, I think. And on the drive back to Columbus, which is like 2 hours, I'm like, you know what? I kind of want to listen to the press conference because I want to hear what JB has to say. Turn it on. First thing
he says. We didn't play Cavalier basketball. Is that what
you said? No. His literal first comment was, I think Chris Fedor was like, oh, JB, what do you think of the game tonight? You know, what did you tell your guys and how are you going to improve moving forward? And he sits down and he goes, well, we obviously didn't defend well enough. And I was like, how is that an acceptable answer? You guys scored 98 points tonight and gave up 107. You can win a ton of basketball games in the NBA right now giving up 107 points. You can't win a ton of games scoring 98 points.
Yeah.
And the fact that that's the first thing he said just proves that, like, in a tight situation, he's going to lean, I got to prevent the other team from scoring, even if I can't score, which is absolutely, like, so traditional and backwards minded. So I think JB is hopeless. Not that he's a terrible person or anything, but I just think that's who he is. He's a defensive first guy, and that's what he wants to do.
Yeah, no, I think he's always been like that. Like, one of the things that drives me nuts in close games is he seems like a guy that's always going to go for the tie instead of the win. Like, it just, I don't know, it drives me nuts. But we'll be back to wrap this up in just a minute. Welcome back to Cavs Podcast. Eli Kim, Chris Francis, Nate Smith. We don't even have hot Googling action here because Eli has a schedule up already. Eli, what does the last 10 games look like for the Cavs?
Well, thankfully there is some relief coming, but also some tough games, to be honest. The Cavs' next game is against the Hornets again, but is a travel game as they will go to Charlotte. Then they come back to face the 76ers on Friday. And then they start kind of the last road trip of the year. They go face the Nuggets on Easter Sunday. Then they visit Colin Sexton. And then they go see KD and Devin Booker. And then they go see LeBron and Kawhi. And I'm very worried about that Saturday, Sunday back-to-back in L.A. because the Cavs are atrocious on Sunday away games. So yes, I can't imagine them playing.
Especially in cities with vibrant nightlife.
Exactly. And then to round out the season, they have the Grizzlies, a three-game homestand with the Grizzlies visiting, the Pacers visiting, and then the Charlotte Hornets visiting for the finale of the season, which I think has been the finale at home like three of the last 4 years for some reason.
What the Pacers?
No, the Hornets.
Oh, hey, I'll take it. They don't look very good. I'll take playing Poku and Davis Bertans all day. Anyway, what do you think the record's going to be, Eli? It sounds like 5-5 to me.
Yeah, I think they will win 5. Yeah, 5-5. I think they'll beat the Hornets twice, but they'll really struggle on that road trip out west. That's kind of my take.
Yeah, I'm with you, and I feel like they'll probably win one game they shouldn't, and they'll probably lose one game they shouldn't. Chris, anything, and where do you think they finish? Do you think they finish third or fourth, or where do you think?
I think they end up staying the 3 seed. I don't think they'll catch Milwaukee by any stretch, but I think they'll end up keeping either the 3 or maybe the 4 seed. But that's kind of where I think they'll pencil out.
Do you think we might see some matchup hunting if that 3 seed isn't all it's cracked up to be, and you might see him try and drop down to the 4?
I could see that if it's like if the Heat look like they're going to be entrenched at the 6 seed, I think they would matchup hunt.
Yeah.
For that.
Yeah. Interesting. Chris, what about you? Any disagreements there?
Yeah. I mean, not really. I think they should go, I honestly think they should go 6-4. given what the schedule is. I do agree they'll struggle on the West Coast, but, you know, 5-5, 6-4, you know, whatever. I mean,
it's tough temptation when you have Tristan Thompson, the mayor of LA, on your team, you know.
Oh, man. Yeah. Well, I mean, at least they, you know, at least it's back to back, you know, I guess, or something. I don't know. but, yeah, no, I mean, I'm not sure if they'll actually, I don't know if matchup hunting is a thing necessarily just because of the unpredictability of teams or whatever, the things outside of your control. So, but I think 5-5, 6-4 sounds pretty reasonable.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I think TT's just looking forward to visiting his kids out there. So
he's a family man.
He is. He is. He's got a lot of Kardashian kids.
That's why he starts multiple families, because he's such a family man.
Absolutely.
That's right.
You know, some of the greatest Cavaliers, one of my favorite quotes is, that movie was more confusing than Mother's Day at Sean Kemp's house.
Wow. What the hell?
Anyway, speaking of movies, you guys got anything to pitch?
Man, I mean, I haven't seen Dune 2 yet. Have you guys seen it?
I went and saw it Sunday.
Is it worth it?
It's definitely worth seeing in the theater. It is.
Nice.
It is epic. I will say that. Like, I didn't love everything about it, but the epic scale definitely comes across. Like, it feels very epic. Much more so than the first movie, I would say. The first movie is a kind of a nice prelude to it, but the scenes, it really builds well. And it's really well paced. It might be a little long at times, but I think it's a hard story to tell without it being a little long, because a lot of it is just being about wandering around in the desert. but it's well paced. It's well written. Really well shot. There's some just really cool battle scenes and that kind of thing. The cast is fantastic. So yeah, it's definitely worth seeing in theaters. I'm surprised they didn't release it in the summer, but I think it got postponed back from November. So I think it's definitely worth the watch. Yeah. And I'm trying to think if I have anything else to pitch. I will pitch going outside and taking a walk, which I was actually able to do today because I feel like this has been the longest winter ever. And it was nice, you know, me and the missus took the dogs and went on like an hour long walk just through the neighborhood and through one of the parks nearby. And I was like, you know, it's pretty nice to live in the Great Lakes region and have a nice late March day you can walk around. And I've got bufflehead ducks on my pond, which only stay for a couple days in the spring. So it's been pretty cool. Pretty nice spring day.
Nice. I love how you pitch cardiovascular health too. What a mensch.
Well, when you sit at a computer all day, you have to be mindful of these things.
Oh, 100%. No, I mean,
yeah.
Sorry if I was being sincere.
No, I wasn't knocking you. I was right there with you. Anyway, Eli, anything to pitch?
No, I don't. Thanks. So, I was going to make a joke about betting and Shohei Ohtani, but I'll refrain.
Well, and you.
Oh, did you hear the Jante Porter?
Yeah, thing?
Yeah.
That's wild. Yeah.
Well, it's just a matter of time. It's too easy to do it. Like, we saw games earlier this year. What was the game with? Was it Jordan Poole? Of course it was. Or somebody. No, it was Gary Payton II. Like when the other team hit the last shot and it blew the cover, like he was like, looked like he was going to pass out, like his face was going to melt off. And everybody was suspecting that he had money on the game. So, yeah, it seems fraught with peril the way they're handling this. And it just the perverse kind of gambling advertising with everything is really kind of gross. Like, I don't, if I had young kids, I was worried about gambling, I would never want to watch sports with them. You know, fortunately, my daughters have zero interest in that, but, you know, it's weird. We live in strange times. Get off my lawn.
Yeah. What's the deal with the Shohei? I mean, like, did he do it?
A lot of people think that he did have a role in it because it just seems like too suspicious.
And now he's throwing his translator under the bus.
Yeah, well, that's what it appears, right? Yeah.
The thing is, the translator is like saying he gambled like $4.5 million, but I just don't know. Even if I had $1 trillion, like, wouldn't you question if your interpreter friend asked for, you know, $500,000 to cover a debt? Like, just seems very suspicious in that regard. And I think it is interesting that, like, I think they're like joking, but there was like a tweet I saw where it was hilarious. It was like, and now we're going to bring you live from DraftKings studio on the Shohei Ohtani gambling case. And then it's like, Jeff Passan, how does something like this happen? As he joins us from the DraftKings studios in Los Angeles. Like,
well, it was so funny. They were putting lines across this betting lines on the screen during the press conference.
So you're like, yeah, this is very obvious why this is happening. and it's just, I don't know. I think, look, I know Nate, you're very against gambling, sports gambling. I dabble in it a little bit here and there, but I definitely see that for people who, you know, it's a form of addiction. I mean, it's just so easily available, and I'm not a fan of when it, you know, can really hurt people. So I think it's a funny story to make, we make in jest, but also just a very humble reminder that anyone can fall victim and prey into that too as well.
Yeah. It's high propensity for moral hazard there. So
yeah, you kind of called that, Nate.
Yeah. Yeah, so, Chris, anything, you don't have anything to pitch?
Well, no, I came up with something. Charlie XCX is producing a new album called Brat, you know, so I'm excited for that. Also, she's going on a little mini tour to support it. So shout out to my girl, Charlie XCX, you know, DMs open.
Oh, yeah, I got some I'll pitch. A band out of Detroit and Ann Arbor. Called Frontier Ruckus. They're kind of a folk rock band that have been around for, I want to say, about 15 years now. They have a new album out called On the North Line. And their albums are all about, you know, the Great Lakes regions and urban and suburban decay. And I find a lot to identify with in their songs. So, yeah, check out Frontier Ruckus, On the North Line. I haven't heard the album yet, but they're doing a Michigan tour, and I'm going to catch them next month. So
nice. Nice. Oh, also, go Duke, the Brotherhood, Sweet 16. Let's go.
Oh, and I will pitch one more thing. Go see Portugal the Man in Cleveland in May, which I can't go to. They moved the concert twice, and I was able to go to both those, but the one they're doing in May, I can't. They moved it to May 12th, I think, and I can't go. So go see Portugal the Man, the best band ever to come out of Alaska in April.
I didn't know they were from Alaska.
Yeah, the two main guys came from Alaska. Yeah. So, yeah, in fact, in the art museum up there, a lot of the sound exhibits are sponsored by them or curated by them. So,
nice.
Anyway, yeah, very cool band. One of my favorite bands. And if you get a chance to see them, go do it. Their lead singer got real sick in February, much like I did, and they had to cancel a bunch of their tour and reschedule stuff. So unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to see them, but hopefully I'm going to be able to see some other awesome shows this summer. So, in fact, I just booked my Hozier tickets, who my kids are a big fan of. So, nice. And with that, we'll sign it off. And as always, go Cavs.
Go Cavs.
Go Cavs.
Thank you for listening to Cavs the Blog Podcast. Check back soon for some more fun with your favorite bloggers. There's a fire.
catch those springtime vibes all over Arizona. Break out of the winter blues by hitting the water at one of our lake and river parks. Take a hike among the wildflowers. Just make sure to stay on the trails and leave the flowers for the bees. Discover Arizona's best kept secret and visit azstateparks.com/amazing to start your springtime adventure.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.